Wow, got this way down. Will everyone in the Missouri Senate please rise for the prayer by our chaplain, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
From the first letter of Peter, we hear, like good stewards of the manifold grace of God, serve one another with whatever gift each of you has received. Gracious God, you have shown us what a servant's heart reveals to the world. We need to keep our service to you in mind today, not as a way of elevating ourselves, but in a way that our gifts assist one another here in this chamber, so our burdens are lightened and our work moves more smoothly. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle-Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Keaveney, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Shaw, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright-Jones.
Senator from second. A quorum is present. The Senate is in session. Secretary, read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, 48th day.
Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. The Senator from Saline.
Mr. President, on my left and your right, I'd like to introduce you to Brian Shule. He is a new student governor for Missouri Western State University in St. Joe. He's a sophomore political science student. Would like the body to make him feel welcome.
Let's welcome this guest from the senator from Saline to the Missouri Senate. Senator from Green.
President, on your right and on my left, some guests here from Springfield that serve us with, and the Boys and Girls Clubs of Springfield doing wonderful work with youth. The director, Pat Gartland, and two board members, attorney Sean McGinnis and Randy Bacchus, who's with Southwest Missouri Container, and I'd ask them to stand and be welcomed in the Missouri Senate.
Let's welcome these guests from the senator from Green to the Missouri Senate. Introductions, Senator from Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to introduce some very special guests we have with us today. To my right and your left, Mr. President, is some of the group here with Missouri Bankers today. It's Keith Tonies, Shelby Tonies, and Doug Mayer. And if I'd like the body to make them feel welcome in their great capital today.
Will the guests of the Senator from Lewis please rise for recognition by the Missouri Senate. Further introductions, Senator from Johnson.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I also have another banker that's here with the MBA Target Bankers Program. He is actually a guest with the Senator from Newton, but if he would please stand, Bill Lee from Arvest Bank in Carthage.
We're delighted to welcome this guest of the Senator from Newton and the Senator from Johnson. Introductions, petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. I do not see the senator from Stoddard. Senator from Stoddard.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I have a concurrent resolution.
Send it forward, sir. We'll proceed.
Mr. President, I would request the reading of the resolution be waived and ask that it be printed in the journal.
Senator, it shall be printed in the journal. The reading is waived.
Mr. President, I now would request unanimous consent of the Senate to suspend Rule 71 for the purpose of taking the concurrent resolution up for adoption.
You've heard the unanimous consent request. Does any senator object? Seeing none, that is how we shall proceed, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the Senate concurrent resolution, what occurs is that we establish as a legislative body a joint committee that consists of Senate and House members, as well as practicing attorneys and prosecutors and those practitioners in the area of the criminal law. And the purpose of the joint committee is to review a new criminal code that has been put forth by prosecutors, by the bar, and the other folks within the legal profession who deal with criminal law. This revision of the criminal code is a pretty comprehensive revision. It involves the entire area of crimes and punishment and sentencing, and the legislation is actually 1,000 pages or more in length. So both Senate and House leadership are in agreement that the review of this bill needs to begin now, so this would take place as soon as we, if we should adopt this resolution and the House adopt it, why the Joint Committee would be able to work immediately. This is a procedure that's a bit unusual under Senate Rule Number 71. However, because both Senate and House leadership have agreed, and I think most of the senators and House members that have worked on the criminal code revision say, hey, listen, this is a big piece of legislation, over 1,000 pages, a comprehensive reform that they need to start the review process as soon as possible so that they can be in place to be ready to take it up next session and start discussion among the full bodies on that. And so, Mr. President, I'm open for any questions.
Does any senator wish to be heard on the motion of the senator from Stoddard? Seeing none, the senator from Stoddard is recognized to close.
I close.
Senator renews his motion on adoption of the resolution. Call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Kevany, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Pergeson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright Jones.
Senator from the 9th, Senator from the 4th, Senator from Franklin. What? Senator from 15th, Senator from Andrew. Senator from Cape Girardeau. By your vote of 31 ayes, 0 no, the resolution is adopted. We are on the order of business of concurrent resolution. For what purpose does the senator from Newton seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. I know you're on the business of resolutions. I just have unanimous consent to do a quick announcement.
Hearing no objection.
Thank you, Mr. President. Today we have two doctors from Joplin, Missouri, Dr. Steve Bazzano, a friend of mine, and Dr. Henry Petrie. I'd ask the body to make them feel welcome.
We're delighted to welcome these doctors. Senator guests of the Senator from Newton please rise? And the Senator from Green.
Mr. President, I'd also seek unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Hearing that, no objection. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Student Body President of Missouri State University Student Government Association just entered the chamber to be with us today, Mr. Scott Turk. He's a senior from Springfield, majoring in communication, and he's one of about 50 students from Missouri State who are here at the Capitol today, and I would ask that he be made welcome as well. He's on your right and my left.
Let's welcome this guest of the Senator from Green. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate Bills for Perfection, the informal calendar.
Senate Bills for Perfection, the informal calendar.
Senate Bill 631, Senator from Polk.
Senate Bill 631, Senator from Polk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 31 with the committee substitute be taken up for perfection.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it.
Mr. The bill President, is before I move that Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill number 631 be adopted.
Proceed with your...
Thank you, Mr. President. This bill simply, years ago when it was established in the grain law for people that bought so many dollars worth of grain, of $100,000 was wrote in the statute. Over the years, because local farmers now, because of that price difference where grain is doubled and tripled, they now have fell into the dealer category where private farmers are now going over that amount of $100,000. What this simply does is take the $100,000 amount out and it replaces it with 50,000 bushels so they don't fall into a dealer category.
Does any senator wish to be heard on the motion to adopt the committee substitute? Seeing none, the senator is recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
The senator renews his motion on adoption of Senate committee substitute. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The substitute is adopted. Senator?
Mr. President, I now move that Senate Bill number 631 is amended by the Senate committee substitute be declared perfected and ordered printed.
Does any senator wish to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, the senator is recognized to close.
I close.
The senator renews his motion on perfection of the bill. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is ordered, perfected, and printed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate Bills for Perfection, the formal calendar.
Senate Bills for Perfection, the formal calendar. What? No. I was looking at him, though. Senate Bill 548, the Senator from Howell. The Senator from Howell, can you please enter the chamber? Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please? You put on the informal calendar.
Mr. President, I ask that bill be placed on the informal calendar.
Place the bill on the informal calendar. Senate Bill 842. Senator from 24th.
Mr. President, I ask that bill, too, be placed on the informal calendar.
Shall be placed on the informal calendar. Senate Bill 625, Senator from Cole. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please place that bill on the informal calendar?
So ordered. Senate Bill 715, Senator from the 8th.
I move that Senate Bill 715 be brought for the body for perfection.
You heard the motion. Many of are the opinion that shall prevail. Say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of Senate committee substitute. Okay. The substitute in the bill is pretty simple. It's a one-page bill. It allows the Adjutant General of the State of Missouri to waive the maximum age for someone that serves in the militia. The Adjutant General may need this for a situation where our guardsmen are deployed and we need somebody of specialty, a doctor or a lawyer that had previously served but is past the age. And there's some also language in here that the Adjutant General asked us to remove, the dealing with complaints of commanding officers. There's currently an IG system in place, so if those guardsmen have a problem, they can go through the IG for their complaints to be heard. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Does any senator wish to be heard on this motion? Seeing none, the senator from the 8th is recognized. Close.
I renew my motion.
The senator renews his motion on adoption of the Senate committee substitute. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The substitute is adopted. Senator?
President, I now move that Senate Bill 715, as amended by the committee substitute, be declared perfected in order printed.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is ordered, perfected, and printed. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Request unanimous consent for the introduction of special guests.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. On my left and your right, I want to recognize some individuals who are visiting our Senate chamber today. They are up here for the Boys and Girls Club Youth of the Year event. Just a little bit of information about the Boys and Girls Club. They provide services to over 69,000 school-aged young people in 18 cities in Missouri. They emphasize character and leadership development and health and life skills. They encourage young people to aspire to the highest level of personal development and to become good citizens who are involved in their communities. I want to commend the Boys and Girls Club across Missouri for the outstanding service they provide to young people and their families. And seated on the chair, on the bench, are the 13 nominees, one of which will be the Missouri State Youth of the Year to represent Missouri in the National Youth of the Year contest for the Boys and Girls Club of America. And one of these lucky nominees will be selected at 12 o'clock today. So I'd ask my colleagues to please give them a warm welcome and wish them well.
That's from the Boys and Girls Club to the Missouri Senate. Senator, shall we stay on? Staying on Senate bills for perfection, Senate Bill 673, the Senator from Phelps.
I move that Senate Bill 673 with committee substitute be taken up for perfection.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body with substitute pending.
Mr. President, I now move that Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill number 673 be adopted. And what the Senate committee substitute did, it went just a little bit farther with the underlying bill, spelled out things just a little bit better. What this legislation applies to and is involved with is presently in Missouri, if you take a motorcycle skills test or take a motorcycle written test, you get a temporary license. It's called an instruction permit. It allows you to ride a motorcycle to gain your skills, and then you take the skills test and you're fully licensed to ride a motorcycle in the state of Missouri. There's a little hole in the law that allows you to keep renewing your temporary motorcycle instruction permit as long as you want. And what this legislation would do would say that you can renew the instruction permit for two additional times for a total of 18 months. And if you have not taken the skills test, then you have to go back and retake the written test. And it also took the restriction in the past. If you had this instruction permit, you couldn't ride a motorcycle greater than 250 cc's. It takes that off because there's not many of those made anymore. But it also, a kid that has a motorcycle endorsement on a temporary motor vehicle permit, that permit is only good for 6 months rather than a normal 12 months. So the motorcycle endorsement applies on his motor vehicle permit as well. And in the past, anyone under the age of 16 with a temporary instruction permit could not ride at nighttime or could not have a passenger. This act actually applies that to everyone with a temporary permit, regardless of age. Any questions? I'll try to answer them.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Phelps to adopt the Senate committee substitute. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 10th, for what reason do you rise?
To inquire the Senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, do you yield?
I certainly do.
He does.
Thank you, Senator. The last thing that you mentioned had to do with, you said right now anyone under the age of 16 that has the temporary permit, that they couldn't have a passenger or ride after dark.
Right.
And now we're expanding that to anybody. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. And so is there a temporary instruction permit for adults too then? I guess is my question. Who would that apply to?
It applies to everyone regardless of age because of the safety factor. When you're learning to ride, you shouldn't have that additional weight. You know, there's things that you do as far as balance on a motorcycle.
Sure.
And that's part of, I think, learning the safety and learning to ride preventatively. And I certainly do agree with that. That was by the industry. Motorcycle manufacturers brought that forward. So, you know, we need to really tighten this up a little bit because I know in my district I had a gentleman that, you know, got a motorcycle, big cycle, took his wife out, and they had a crash, and they're both suffering from some horrible injuries just because he didn't understand the cornering aspects and the stopping ability of that motorcycle.
Okay. And so how does it work now if an adult wants to drive a motorcycle? They have to get a temporary instruction permit before they get their actual...
They take the written test. If they pass that written test, then they get the temporary permit that they can ride.
Okay.
With restrictions.
Okay.
And for those, and in the past, what's happened is you just keep renewing that rather than going ahead and taking the skills test.
Taking the skills test. Okay. So that makes sense. Then I just had two other quick questions for you. Are we also repealing the restriction that allows or right now prevents 16 and under from traveling more than 50 miles from their home?
Yes.
Okay.
No, we're not repealing that. Before I say that, let me see.
I think.
Yeah, anyone that's 16 and under, they will still, they've got the full restrictions.
But on page 5 of the Senate committee substitute, I noticed that there are brackets and that we're taking out that the operator shall not travel over 50 miles from the operator's home address.
Yes, and that applies to
the youth only? Or no, that applies, I guess, to everybody then.
Yeah. That's right. Right.
Okay, so for what we're going to be doing moving forward is that anyone that is under the age of 16 that has this permit, right now they're not allowed to ride the larger bike, and right now they're not allowed to go more than 50 miles from home. But if this bill passes, we'll be removing those two restrictions. Is that correct?
That is true.
Okay. And did I read that for a person under the age of 16 to get this permit that they have to have the consent of their parent or guardian?
Yeah, that written consent.
Okay. Yeah. And then the last question I have, Senator, is it said that there was one witness against this. Their organization was called Abate. Who is that?
This gentleman was a member of Freedom of the Road Riders, and I'm not sure what his idea was here. They had quite a rift because Freedom of Road Riders really promote this, and they're all about education, particularly on youth, and getting more people to ride. And so I think he's no longer a member of that organization.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? The senator from the 5th, for what reason do you rise?
Mr. President, I ask for unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
Thank you. To my left and to your right, Mr. President, we have a young lady named Marsha Walls. She is the Youth of the Year for the Herbert Hoover Boys and Girls Clubs in the city of St. Louis. Her story is very compelling. She's in competition today, and she has overcome many obstacles and has learned to mentor others based on what she learned at the club. And I would ask the Senate to please welcome her and give her a welcoming round of applause.
Let's welcome the guest of the Senator from the 5th of the Missouri Senate today. Does any other senator desire to be here? Senator from Johnson, for what reason
do you seek recognition? Thank you, Mr. President. Seeing no objection, I'd like to introduce a very special guest today.
Hearing no objection, proceed.
It is our physician of the day, Dr. Curtis Long from Bates County in Butler. He's been coming up here since 1964, and if you'll look at his black bag that was given to him upon graduation from medical school, the same black bag that he's been bringing up since 1964, he is a treasure in Bates County. He also operates Briarwood Farms, and he is our physician of the day, Dr. Curtis Long. Thank you so much for coming today.
Let's welcome the doctor of the day and the guest of the Center from Johnson. Does any other senator desire to be heard? The senator from the 11th in Jackson County, for what reason do you seek recognition?
President, I'd like to briefly inquire of the senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, you yield. He does. Proceed.
Senator, I don't have any problem with your bill. I just had a small question. I know that oversight said that it could be accomplished with existing staff, but I did note that revenue said that they might need additional staff. We tend to go off what oversight says, but was there some issue, and did revenue ever bring up that they might need additional staff?
I did not get that information from them that they would. See, this is all done pretty much locally, and they're doing this now.
Right.
I think when you go in to renew, when you go in the system, your past renewal is right there. So I don't think it's in other words, and you know, when this came up about changing this law, I'm a prime example of a person that's abusing the system. I have a temporary permit that I've had for 4 years. And that's not right. I should either have to retake the written or take the skills. But I'm not really much of a motorcycle rider, and probably I'm
not either. I don't have a problem with people who want to be, and I don't. Again, your underlying bill, I don't have a that. I just was wondering if that issue came up when you introduced the bill, and we can't be talking about a huge number of people, can we really? I mean,
I think most people go ahead complete the skills.
We're probably talking realistically about less than 100 in the state a year.
There may be more than that, honestly.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So we don't know how many might do this. Okay.
I do not.
But the actual process is not that cumbersome or bureaucratic intensive. Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the adoption of the Senate committee substitute by the senator from Phelps? Hearing none, Senator, you recognize the close on that motion.
Mr. President, I renew my motion for the adoption of the Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill 673.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Phelps renews his motion to adopt the Senate committee substitute. All is me of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary, no. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted the Senate committee substitute. We're back on the bill. Senator from Phelps.
Mr. President, I now move that Senate Bill number 673, amended by the Senate committee substitute, declared perfected and ordered printed.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Phelps. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized. Close.
I close.
Senator from Phelps renews his motion that Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill 673 be declared perfected and ordered printed. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is declared perfected and ordered printed. Staying on that same calendar, Senate Bill 856, Senator from the 2nd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Bill 856 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from the 2nd. All those of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary, no. The aye appears to have it. The aye does have it. The bill is before the body. Senator from the 2nd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move for the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute, Senate Bill number 856. What this bill does for the body is it will set up an interim committee to study what is going on with Missouri Employers Mutual, an insurance company. It's been in the news quite a bit lately. There's a lot of information that we need to understand. Number one, how is it operating? Should it be operating more efficiently? Number two, what is the market value if it should be put up for sale, in the private market? Number three, is it still serving a purpose from whence it was created, so many years ago? A lot of the things on, they purchased an insurance company out of Colorado. How is that functioning? Is that still within its state statute? There's an awful lot of questions, especially after the audit by Auditor Schweik that came out. So we're trying to get to the bottom of this. It's difficult to do because it is a very complex issue. So this interim study, this interim committee would be able to answer a lot of these questions and get to the bottom of some of these things. And that's what it does. Gladly we'll answer any questions. If not, I would renew my motion.
You've heard the motion from the senator from the second. Does any senator seek recognition on that motion? Senator from the first, for what reason do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. Could I inquire the senator from the second?
Senator from the second, do you yield?
I do.
He does. You may proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. So I apologize, Senator. I was in another discussion. What your bill actually would do is set up an interim committee to actually look at Missouri Mutuals?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if you're aware, but over the last interim, the Committee on Governmental Accountability actually took a lot of time and had a lot of investigative hearings and took a lot of testimony and then issued a report on that for the General Assembly that was filed with the Pro Tem's office. And then I know that your committee heard, I guess, three different bills. I had a bill in front of the committee, and the senator from the 15th had a bill. So I guess my question would be, I mean, we have, looked at this in great depth, and I think that we've come out with some good recommendations on, how we might proceed. I guess my question would be, what are we going to find out that we haven't found out thus far by establishing an interim committee?
Because what the intent of this is to see if it, what is the likelihood, or should it be sold, privatized, or extinguished. So I think it's, number one, we'll probably go into just how it operates and how it works and things, but then try to figure out what is the market cap. Is it something that could be sold? If it was, what could we get for it? So that's kind of more of the angle of, with the recommendations of, that you guys have kind of came up with, and they're now starting to pay a dividend and things of that nature. But really, is it still a viable need in the marketplace? And if not, what is the likelihood of it being sold to the private sector, and what could come of that? How would that work? So that's kind of how it's with the question.
And with the testimony that your committee heard over the course of the three pieces of legislation that were presented, they were not able to ascertain what direction that they thought we should go. I guess. By your bill passing out of your committee, that is the decision of the committee, or do you anticipate that either of the other pieces of legislation that your committee heard would be moving forward?
Probably not. This is probably the vehicle that's going to be moving forward, because I know that the senator from the 15th had a bill, and he came up with his dollar amount figure based off some calculations, but those were refuted by some of the actuarials. On how what the valuation of the company might be and how much could go into general revenue. So again, we're just going to try to build off what some of those legislations brought up. We only had an hour or so to hear the bills and ask questions, and we're in session with lots of other issues. So I think with a complex issue like this, the interim committee can try to get to some more hard numbers and look maybe what some other states have done and talk to some different actuarials rather than just the one that was at our committee hearing.
What's your opinion, Senator, of the testimony that you heard as far as the options? When I looked at the Senator's bill from the 15th, I certainly couldn't see anything within statute that would allow for us to take a certain amount of money from the reserves of MEM
and use it the way we saw fit. You know, I think it was good to start and drive the discussion. My bill, more or less, would privatize MEM. One of the things that came out of, you know, the findings of our investigation, governmental accountabilities, was that we have a mutual fund that doesn't act, or we have a mutual company that doesn't act like a mutual company, had never paid a dividend, and had never returned to the shareholders, more or less, the people that have policies, these monies, yet they continued to amass, you know, a great reserves, correct?
Correct.
So now after a year's worth of investigation into this so-called mutual company, they've decided to pay out their first dividend, correct?
Right. That is correct.
And that dividend is $2 million?
Correct.
Is what I read. Well, Senator, I appreciate the fact that I guess that you want to continue moving this process forward, and that's what you see that your bill does. I would hope that that we would make a decision on this in privatizing this, because what we have found from looking at all the data and looking at how this market has evolved since MEM was created to address a problem in our state where small employers did not have a place to go and fulfill the mandate that the state put on them to have workers' comp coverage, that we have a much different marketplace today. It's very competitive. MEM owns about 16% of the market share, and you have about 209 different companies writing these policies in the state. And there's no reason that this company should have an unfair advantage against their competitors through their not-for-profit or their just the way they're structured that allows them to get out of paying federal income tax, correct? I mean,
Yes, they do not pay that. That's correct.
Right, right. So, Senator, I shouldn't say that I'm not going to support your idea or you, because you are moving it forward.
Right.
You are taking a look at it. I just believe that, you know, we've established that this is something that needs to be changed. And I hope that that's
right.
Your goal. I mean, I wish that we
and your
didn't have to study it for another year.
Right.
But,
you know, your committee is already, the work you did already affected change. I don't think they would have done the dividend if it wasn't for the work that you guys have done. You know, and just how they select their board membership. It's completely needs to change. And those types of things you guys brought to light, it's just, you know, from my standpoint, if we're going to privatize or sell or something, that's a huge undertaking of actuarial study. What is the true value and what's the market? So it's one of those I just don't want to rush into and say, hey, we're going to do it. But I think you've already affected a lot of positive change over there. But I want to try to get to what... You know, what is the market out there for this? If we do it, what do we get for it? And then what happens to the small market, the $10,000 policies and below, and things of that nature? Which, when you get into the weeds, you know that can get a little tedious.
And I apologize, Senator. Who is serving on this interim committee?
I don't know. Hasn't been set up yet. So
what does it actually do? Does it ask the pro tem to establish an interim committee?
Yes. 3 from the pro tem, 2 from the minority leader.
Okay.
Would be set up.
A 5 person?
Yes.
Interim committee made up of senators?
And the only thing that I know is the senator from Jefferson will not be on that committee.
I'm not on.
Per his request.
I mean, I think, Senator, that it would certainly help the process. On some of the things that you're looking for, because I have to be honest, our committee never really sat down with actuaries and, you know, maybe some of the professionals in some of these different areas that you're addressing as far as what is, you know, I don't know if we've got history of what happened with other companies like this in other states, and, you know, but that certainly would be something that I would encourage that committee you know, to maybe the first place to go. Because, again, a lot of this ground has been covered.
Right.
So, anyway, thank you, Senator, for the inquiry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Does any other senator desire to be heard on the Senate Committee substitute of the senator from the second? Senator from the fourth, for what reason do you seek recognition?
To inquire the sponsor of the bill.
Senator from the St. Charles 2nd District, do you yield?
I do.
He does. You may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. As you're well aware, I served on an interim committee with you over this past interim session for the health insurance exchanges, and I've got a couple of questions about this bill. Number one, do we need this bill to set up an interim committee? Because we didn't have one for the health insurance exchanges.
If it was that one set up by the pro tem, the last
one? Doesn't the president pro tem have the authority to set up some interim committees?
That's a real good question for the pro tem.
I guess you haven't talked to him about your bill, huh?
Apparently, I must have mentioned it because it got on the calendar.
Mr. President?
Senator from the fourth.
I inquire of you.
State your in... No.
No?
No, apparently you can't. I mean...
My apologies.
You can inquire of me. I can't debate the underlying bill or Senate committee substitute.
Okay.
I'm presiding over the chamber, but I would take an inquiry, but not dealing with the topic on the floor at this time.
May I inquire the senator from Stoddard?
Senator, give me just one moment, 1 minute.
Senator from the fourth, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
From Stoddard.
Senator from Stoddard, do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator, and sorry to be...
No, that's fine. It's good to be here.
I'm looking at the senator from the second's bill, and from what I can see, it sets up an interim committee. Isn't this... Don't you have the power to do this without a statute?
Say that again. I didn't hear you, Senator.
Don't you have a, doesn't your office have the power to set up an interim committee without a bill, without a statute?
We can, yes.
So I guess my question is, what's the purpose of the bill if it's of an urgent meaning? You could set this up without even having a bill.
Yes, but this isn't my bill.
So I guess... Is it say?
But, I mean, Senator, I can't set up a joint committee with the House and the Senate. I can set up a committee of senators to study the issue.
And that's all this bill does?
This is all it's... I haven't read this in a few days.
It sets up five senators, three Republican, three majority leader, three from the majority party and two from the minority. So, I guess, can one assume... that should this bill fail today, we're going to have an interim committee anyway?
You know, the chances are probably high, yes.
Okay.
I'm
Thank you,
like
Senator.
All the other senators, I don't want to show my hand.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Senator from the 15th.
To inquire the senator from the 2nd District in St. Charles, the senior senator from St.
Senator
Charles.
Senator from the 2nd, do you yield?
Of course.
He does.
Thank you for yielding.
Oh, no problem.
And I also want to thank you for, we had a hearing on my bill. There were, as I recall, three different bills. You had your bill, which we have in front of us. Senator from the 1st had a bill that I think privatized it. The bill that I originally filed... privatized it and allowed the state, because I believe it to be a state entity, to recapture for the taxpayers $127 million. And the reason why, I think it's instructive to go back to a little bit of history here.
In 93, it was created as a, quote, independent public corporation, whatever that is. And I think...
IPC.
What's that?
An IPC.
Right. Are you familiar with the... With IPCs?
Yeah, independent public corporations.
I knew you had a greater expertise than most. and I think in reviewing this, it served the market well at the time in that there was a gap. There was a gap in the marketplace that this company served at the time for work comp insurance. At the time, the governor got to appoint the people on the board. Now, the governor still does retain three of the five. And the reason why that's important, and I bring that up, is the case law out there as to whether or not this is a public entity or not is generally governed by whether the governor has control of the board, which he still does. Now, they're not subject to confirmation. They got a $5 million startup loan that they paid back. It's a not-for-profit. Their premiums can be lower. They can issue $40 million in revenue bonds. And I think through the most recent state audit by the auditor, determined that they have saved, by being federally tax-exempt, $50 million. And I would argue to the detriment now of their competition, because the market is healthy. And why do I say the market's healthy? Their market share has gone down. You have 332 companies in this market, 209 of them writing policies. You have, in 2002, they were writing $160 million in premiums, in 2011, 116. So there are other players in the marketplace that have filled this gap, I think, that this was originally intended to do. And the reason why I had the $127 million, if you look at the industry standard, and I understand that the actuary employed by Missouri Employers Mutual didn't think this was enough of a reserve, but the market standard by the NAIC is a 3-to-1 ratio. They have $163.1 million in policy surpluses, when the industry standard says that they ought to really have $35.9 million. They've never, ever issued a dividend. Magically, now, they are issuing a dividend. My belief is, and I think that they probably, shockingly, will probably come and ask that the governor no longer appoint members to the board. I think that'll be the next step, to create this veil that they're not a public entity and they shouldn't be touched. So I've actually moved away from taking the $127 million back for taxpayers, which I think the taxpayers in the state are entitled to actually saying, let's liquidate this thing. Let's sell off. Let's sell off the assets. And I think we'll get more than $127 million. Now, I know that won't happen in time for this budget, and the desire to deal with this issue is not fueled by the $400 or $500 million that we have to cut. I just looked at this objectively once the news started coming out of the crony political contributions and all the things that have happened that make this thing look like it needs reform. The reality is it's a cash cow, and the policyholders have never received a benefit, because if it was a private entity, that's what they'd be doing. But they haven't been doing that. The governor retains control. They're sitting on more money than they should, and this was originally a taxpayer-funded endeavor. So in my view, the taxpayers ought to be able to benefit now that this company served no further purpose, really, to have special treatment. I mean, the $50 million that they've benefited from, that other companies haven't benefited from, I just don't think is right. I don't think the government ought to be in this business, and I would advocate for liquidating this thing, sell it off, and let them go on their merry way. Continue to be an employer in all the places that they employ people, but to sell this thing off. And so my hope is that with your committee that we have input to really look at this thing and not just continue to sort of, shelter these guys as they make their way through.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the committee is trying to do, because, we also heard testimony that for not paying the dividend, they were able to keep rates lower, so you could, have higher rates but then pay a dividend. So we hear a lot of conflicting numbers and things. So what we're going to try to do in this is actually get down to the brass tacks and say, okay, let's compare your rates for especially the small group market and stuff to all of the others? Are they really that much lower, or is that just a red herring? And if it is that much lower, how much would a dividend, if we would have went back and paid a dividend the last couple of years, what would that have done to rate? So, I mean, there's just so much math and just data that needs to go into that. But I think that's the whole goal of the committee is to ascertain, you know, if we privatize it, is it $117 million? Is it $140 million? Is it $250 million? Or if you did that, this would be the cause. And it's really just get into these will probably be some really boring hearings.
I would imagine. And
it sounds like you're wanting to sit in on a lot of those.
Yeah, I'd like to. Because what I don't want to have happen is at the end of this process, just kick the can down the road, and then we come up with recommendations to further protect it. Like, well, you know what we should do? We should not let the governor appoint anymore, and we should issue regular dividends. Well, where I'm going is, let's, you know, sort of detach ourselves from this and figure out the best way. You know, as a lawyer working with businesses, sometimes you're figuring out the best way to wind down the business, and so I think that's hopefully where we're going. So I appreciate you.
We should have a lot of hearings in Jefferson County so that the senator from Jefferson County can come and watch, even though he won't be on the committee, because I know he's so interested in this.
I think this is right up his alley, so I share that sentiment. Thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Senator from the 11th. Senator from the 15th, do you yield? He does proceed.
Senator, I just wanted to briefly talk to you. We never, you did present your bill on this issue in the committee I sit on about the Missouri Employers Mutual. I wanted to briefly talk about, and I assume we're doing this bill sort of instead at this moment, instead of your bill, but you feel that this process will at least look objectively and fairly at your concept of this?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have a lot of respect for the senator from the second, and I think that in fairness, as long as everybody's serious about doing this, and this isn't just a, you know, kabuki theater here, I think we can do it. Personally, if it were up to me, I think we ought to start the process of selling this off, and the taxpayers ought to be able to gain the benefit.
But I wanted to briefly, we're not on your bill, but I wanted to talk about that concept since you talked about it, and not in a lot of detail. Regardless of the problems that happen in any organization of corruption, whatever,
right?
The federal government, the FBI, Justice Department is going to deal with that. That happens in banks, but you don't do away with banks. That happens in Wall Street, you don't do away with Wall Street. That happens in the plumbing industry, and you don't do away with the plumbing industry. I mean, just, you know, human beings do whatever. You don't do away with governments when it happens in governments. All that aside, what this idea of taking the, do you feel, though, in your process that this can create a pretty compelling case that in the last two decades it's brought some balance to this industry? I mean, this entrant and this idea has stabilized the markets it's in. I mean,
yeah, no, and I get that. And actually,
and so my only concern about the concept you had of, while it's per se our money, it sort of is, sort of isn't, but do you, in your process, are you saying we should wipe out MEMS?
No. Well, I think they ought to just compete in the marketplace like the 292 other companies that are writing policies. I think this company now is getting a special benefit that there's no longer a justification for it. There's two ways that you deal with work comp rates, generally speaking. One is you do something like this, which happened in 93, or two is you do something like tort reform in 2005. We've done both. So I would argue we no longer need the solution that existed in 1993.
That in 2005 I was here, and part of this was we also passed a work comp bill, which we're still dealing with.
Right. But I guess what I'm saying is I think objectively you could say that since that time, comp rates have moved down. I mean, I think this year there's a reduction overall of 3% of comp rates.
Right.
And that's been pretty consistent for the last several years. So if you're making the argument for the justification for tort reform, you could certainly conclude that what you did in 2005 has helped lower rates.
But I think that was the idea in 93. And from just studying this thing a little bit, these things come around every 15 years or so in the legislature. What do we do about rising rates if that's the cycle that you're in? And you, and the way I've looked at it or seen it happen, the way you deal with it is you deal with either what they did in 93 or what they did in 2005. And really what I'm saying now is I don't think you need both. And especially, and I haven't even, and I don't really want to get into the sort of the allegations and all right. of the things that have happened. It's not constructive.
We're not qualified. And, well, we're not qualified to do
and it. I don't, and quite frankly, I'm just trying to look at this company.
Well, I am too, and I just wanted to be clear. You, per se, are not advocating doing away with MIMS. You're just talking about a different structure and environment in which they would continue in the future.
Well, yeah, divesting ourselves of MIMS in that they move on. They go off and they can compete. There are plenty of buyers looking at the revenue that they, which is $107.8 million in net premium revenue and $163 million in policy surplus that has never, ever been sent out to any policyholders. I think there'd be a lot of interest in the marketplace for somebody to come in and buy this company. But that's all something that we can look at. So
sure.
That's sort of where I'm at, but I'm open to the best way
and
to
I
move
just
forward.
Would, I just would warn you, not having a great deal of experience like some of the people who used to serve in this body, but, you know, I've watched a lot happen with comp, and I would just warn you that be careful what you wish for. You know, we have a lot of business community lobbyists that advocated stuff in 2005, and they sat in this chamber, and I remember having a discussion about strict construction, right?
Yeah.
And right now, what are we dealing with? Strict construction, because it was an unintended consequence, and they didn't, for the business community did not foresee this, the Supreme Court ruling on strict construction.
Right.
Right? And so...
Yeah, a lot of the bad a lot of the so-called bad decisions, okay...
Right.
Are related to bad legislation.
Or, right, and I'm just
not,
saying,
and I don't
even
mean
going
to
back
say
to
that,
comp.
That comp reform was bad, but you got to be careful, and that's
right.
why how words are in.
And
are
that's the only thing I would caution you on is before we make a decision of doing away with MIMS or changing it dramatically, look at where we're going with all
yeah.
this. And I know you will. I'm just
well,
saying.
Well, and that's why I'm open, and that's why I'm open to this process. That we're
right.
that we're moving on to really look at it and do it the right way.
If people have done wrongdoing, they should go to jail. That remedies that. People that happens in government. What we don't do away with governments, you know. And you recognize
yeah.
that. I just have watched a lot of decisions in comp where right now we're dealing with the second injury fund and all sorts of ancillary issues on. And I remember the business community in 2005. Oh, you'll solve all the problems if you cap it at 3%. You'll solve all the problems if you have a strict construction. You'll solve all the problems if you abrogate these court decisions. Guess what? We're still dealing with it my last 25 days.
Right. And some of these issues, quite frankly, are issues that the legislature are always going to deal with. I mean, they're always going to be on the radar screen. And all I'm saying here is, and I think the Senator from the Second is open to this, is let's have a real dialogue about where the market is and what role this company has, and does government have a role in this company, or should it?
I know you'll do that, and I just wanted to make that point. I think I'm gonna end my inquiry because I think the Senator from Johnson has some guests from the Missouri Magpie Association.
He has a lot of people visiting him. I think it's because he's so magnanimous.
Yes. And he does such a great job with the introduction of, you know, he gets so giddy about it, like he's so delighted to see his fellow man every day.
Sort of like the MC of the Senate.
Yeah, or Mr. Rogers, whatever you prefer.
Like a game show.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Boone.
Mr. President, to acquire a senator from the Second, but I will yield temporarily if the senator from the 31st has introduction as special guest.
All right. Senator from Johnson.
Seeing no objection, or I would like to ask unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Seeing no objection, you can introduce that.
Thank you.
Guest.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thanks to Senator from the 11th for ending his riveting inquiry. I have some great guests here from Cass County. They are actually here to visit with Representative Bratton and the Senate office here. So if they would stand as I call their name, Kenneth and Lois Zeller, John and Sheila Oliver of Lake Winnebago, Suzanne and Amy Garland from Harrisonville, Lee and Ira Garla from Harrisonville, Mary Cotman from Pleasant Hill, and Zach Pollack from Harrisonville. So we want to thank our guests from Cass County.
Hey, if those guests would rise. Thank you for coming and visiting the Missouri Capitol and the Missouri Senate. Senator from the First.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I could get unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest that's with us in the chamber today.
Seeing no objections, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Visiting from the First District today, I'd like to introduce to the body over here on my left and your right, Mr. President, Mr. Charlie Bonney. Charlie is the state lead ambassador for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, and he carries the proud title of a cancer survivor, and I'm proud to have him here from the First District today, and I would hope that the body would make him feel very welcome, Mr. President.
The guests from the Senate of the First please rise, and the body would make him feel welcome. Okay, Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. I inquire the Senator from the Second.
Senator from Second, do you yield to the Senator of Boone?
When he's done texting.
Proceed.
I was catching up on my news.
So we're on your bill, and what this bill is, this is the bill to put together a study of what to do with Missouri employers' insurance.
Yes.
Okay, and I think the Senator from the 15th said there's some competing bills out there, some just jumping right in to privatizing MEM.
There was one that says privatize it now, one that says go in and take a chunk of their reserves, and then this one that says let's figure out, you know, if we'd have privatized, what dollar amount should we privatize, should we not?
Right. And I think we've heard both the Senator from the 15th and the Senator from the 11th have raised some very good points, and I think that one thing we shouldn't lose sight of is, you know, there's a reason. The reason MEM was created, and the only public money there is the $5 million that they got up front, which they paid back. But on that issue, it was because we criminalized business not having workers' comp insurance. In other words, penalty of going to prison if you don't buy this product. And the concern was, what's the market going to do? Because obviously, there could be a potential increase in the cost if somebody knows they're facing a criminal penalty for not buying the product. And so the concept was some form of quasi-governmental entity that would at least make sure there was some regulation. Now, I know that Missouri Employers Mutual has the largest segment of small business in the state of Missouri for their work comp coverage. And the assets they have on hand, because they are a mutual insurance company, that's money that did not come from the state of Missouri. It was paid in by those companies. And I firmly believe that if we moved in and tried to take that money, we would get sued for taking somebody else's $127 million, and we would lose. But I do think the Senator from the 15th raises some good points. Is this, we should always, on these type of entities, look at whether or not do we still need this. Well, we still criminalize the non-possession of workers' comp insurance, and I think the threat of somebody getting stretched over a barrel because they've only got certain people they can buy that product from, and those people know that it's a criminal penalty if they don't buy it. You know, we're looking at that in some other areas of policy that we're dealing with right now. So that's still there. You know, I do want to address the fact that you do have the question that when you look at the analysis of whether or not something is a governmental entity or not, and the Senator from the 15th correctly points out that one thing that you can look at is whether or not the governor has control over who controls the entity. But those cases generally deal with state law or a state mechanism that says the governor puts somebody on a board. And what they've done with Missouri Employers Mutual, it doesn't say that in the law. Missouri Employers Mutual, through their own corporate bylaws, has said that the governor picks. And that's a horse of a little bit different color. I don't know where that shakes out, but I think these are the things I take it that if your bill passes and you put this together, we're going to look at all those issues, including what the impact is going to be to small business, because we still hold them criminally liable for not purchasing workers' comp insurance, correct?
That is correct, and especially the small market, the $10,000 and below, because that's the area where there's not as much competition, even though there's a market share and there's a lot of other companies. That's a key component. And then those that do business outside of Missouri but that are here in Missouri, the piece of risk that they have on that's outside, and that's why they went into the Colorado company. So it is a very complex issue that it just in even though we had 2 days worth of hearings in the Insurance Small Business Committee, it's just you need to get into some actuarial figures. You need to look at a lot of numbers of what's going on in other states, and that's what we're going to try to do is just, you know, get to the bottom of a lot of those questions with real hard numbers.
And I'm assuming in your study, is the information, the data is gathered, there'd be opportunity for a lot of interested entities to weigh in, particularly small business.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Senator from 13th.
A unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
This will be my last time introducing this school group, but today we have with us 7th grade students, 30 of them, from St. Angela Merisi. This is the school that both my son that you met earlier this week and my daughter who you met last week graduated from. They are here today with Mrs. Teresa Kramer. Two of her children graduated with my children from this school. And their principal, who was the principal when my kids were there, Mary Ann Kaufman. With us today to be honorary pages are Christian Augsburger, Ellen Kane, Matthew Newton, Emma Wolf. Please give a warm welcome to a school that I think highly of, the students from St. Angela Merisi.
Senator from the first.
Thank you, Mr. President. Could I inquire the senator from the second?
Senator from the second, do you yield? Proceed.
Thank you, Senator, for yielding. I know that it sounds like your voice is maybe not holding out.
You know, the allergies, all the pollen, the last couple days, it's really gotten to me.
So maybe you were giving out, doing a lot of speechifying or something.
I am doing a lot of speechifying, but those are usually 3.5 minutes each, so.
Okay. Senator, just wanted to cover a couple of things that, you know, since some of the inquiries that you've had since we last spoke. My bill 866 actually would put in place the process of privatizing MEM, but it's not something that just says you have to be privatized, go do it. It actually allows for this process to take place over about a two-year period. It would necessitate that the Board of Directors by January 1st of 2014 would establish a successor mutual insurance company. And then by January of 2013, they would provide a report to the governor, the president pro tem of the Senate, and the speaker of the House on what the roadmap, you know, to that end would be. So in that process, they would be issuing a report that would calculate the value, if any, what the state equity would be, if any. And another important provision within this bill was after that report was finished, I tried to put forth the idea that the equity that they did have in their company, you know, was not the state's. I mean, if the report says that they've paid back the money they borrowed from the state, as the senator from Boone mentioned, these are premiums that were paid in by those membership companies that, you know, into a mutual company, mutual company. So my direction, unlike the senator from the 15th, was to say, I believe it's time for you to compete, you know, in the marketplace, but the revenues that you have belong to you and to those policyholders. And, of course, you're right. We did encourage them that if you're a mutual company, pay a dividend like a mutual company would and should. The other final question that I have for you is the senator from Boone mentioned that we should have the opportunity for testimony from small business owners. This issue has been pretty public since the original reports that came out in the media about some of the problems, more or less, that didn't really have to do with how this business was run and, you know, some of the board problems right. They had. I mean, there's been a bright light shined on MEM. And I got a lot of calls from businesses and small businesses around the state. I guess my question for you, did we have them lined up at your committee hearing with people testifying against any of these bills or testifying in favor? For instance, I don't know the answer to this, so that's, I'm not like a good lawyer. I should probably know the answer to the question before I ask you. But, I mean, did you have a lot of small businesses and small business people show up and testify in favor of your bill and against the senators from the 15th and my bill?
I'd have to go back and look. I mean, there was testimony in support of this bill from a handful of organizations. You know, so I've talked to small business owners that are very happy with the services that they get from it, but they don't know the inner workings, and they just know that that's who their insurer is, and it's worked great, and they have a good rate. But getting into the inner workings, they knew nothing about how it worked. The only thing that I would say is in the testimony is that there was a lot of conflicting testimony on, you know, why are the reserves this high and the NASD values based off other. And so there was just a lot of confusion on our part of conflicting testimony on, okay, the reserves versus the surplus and what's the difference. And the NASD recommended values that was in the Senator from the 15th, you know, applies to this. But when you factor this in, it brings it down and it's right in line. There was just so much conflicting information. That's why we wanted to kind of head this route. And just try to get down to the bare numbers of it.
Is there a time frame that this interim committee has to issue a report?
By the end of the year.
Sorry?
By 12/31. A report needs to be issued by 12/31/12.
Of 12?
Yes.
Okay. All right. As I recall, Senator, and I'll let you go, you know, as we were working through this process, most of the feedback that I heard from either small business people or competitors of MEM was that they thought that it was time for them to be privatized. So just for the sake of the body, that's the feedback that I received when we were looking into this. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Second, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Senator from Second renews his motion to adopt Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 856. As many are of the opinion that motion should prevail, say aye. As many of to the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Second.
I now move that Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill number 856 be ordered, perfected, and printed.
Any senators desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator for Second, you recognize to close.
I close, Mr. President.
Senator for Second renews his motion that Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 856 be declared perfected in order printed. As many are of the opinion that motion should prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, say no.
No.
The aye appears to have it. The ayes do have it. It'll be ordered perfected in order printed. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, the informal calendar, Senate Bill 842.
Okay. Senator from 24th, you're recognized for a motion on 842.
President, I move that Senate Bill 842 with Senate Committee Substitute be taken up for perfection.
As many of are of the opinion that motion should prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from 24th.
President, I now move that Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 842 be adopted. The Senate Committee Substitute made one simple change to the original bill. We heard in our committee hearings that the board felt as if we were too restrictive and they wanted the capacity to have flexibility, and the original bill called for a freezing of the contribution rate, and in the committee substitute we allowed for them to raise the contribution rate if they so felt it was necessary, and that's the only significant change, so I renew my motion.
Any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator of the 14th.
Mr. President, I'd like to inquire of the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, you yield.
Most certainly.
I was out of the chamber for explaining this bill. Can you go through it?
Certainly. I was just on the Senate Committee Substitute, was going to get to the bill. What the bill and I mentioned the change in the code, the substitute is to allow flexibility. Essentially what the bill attempts to do, in August of 2001, the Board of Trustees of the Public School and Education Employees Retirement System adopted with much fanfare a funding stabilization policy to maintain the financial health of the system. So this policy, what it did is it stabilized contribution rates for members and employees at or near 2011-12 school year levels, which for one plan is 14.5%, for another plan it's 11.5% each side. It provides an annual COLA of 2% when inflation is...
An annual COLA
of 2% when actual inflation is between 0 and 5%.
Which is consistent with where we are right now.
Yes, most certainly. This, again, I'm reiterating the policy as put forward by the Board of Trustees.
Okay.
This policy was their response to the dramatic decline in their assets. Their unfunded, the plan dipped below, well below 80% in terms of their funding ratios. They felt it was necessary to ask of all their members, both the 79,000 active participants, meaning the teachers that are in the plan, as well as the 57,000 retirees, that they needed to adopt a policy to reflect the reality that the plan was becoming severely underfunded. So this was adopted and agreed upon and endorsed and supported by all the major education groups when it was put forward in August of 2001. What Senate Bill 842 does is essentially applauds them for that decision and then codifies that decision such that we look for them to maintain these new, to go forward with these new decisions, these new policies, until such time that the plan become 100% funded. And at that time, once the plan becomes 100% funded, then they can go and make whatever decisions they would choose at that point. They can decide.
How difficult is it to get to 100%?
That's a great question, actually. If left completely alone and out of the hands of elected officials, pensions would not only get to 100%, but they would often get well beyond 100%. The challenge that not just this pension plan, which today is unfunded by $5 billion, but the challenge for all defined benefit plans is that in those periods of time where the investment performance of the assets is extraordinary, very often decision makers, governors of the plan, or elected officials choose to change the variables of the plan, meaning to change that they change the contribution rate by decreasing them, or in some cases avoiding them. They very often expand the benefit itself. They do things like adopt COLAs. When this plan was first introduced, it didn't have a COLA. They changed the term for the COLA. So what happens is, unfortunately, it's the case that the vast majority of plans, even after extraordinary periods of time of 8, 10, 12, 17 years of extraordinary performance, the plans don't get to 100% funded because the commitment of the board wanes and the contributions are reduced or the benefit is increased. So if left alone, pension plans should easily get to 100%. And actually what's supposed to happen, you know, we as a state and all of our pension plan system, and it's extraordinary the liability in total that the state has, but pension plans all across the country, what they actually should have done in the 80s and the 90s is they should have let their pension assets grow to such a degree that the plan would be 125% funded. With that, we've had in this country, we've had 16 major recessions. Mm-hmm. And when those recessions occur, on average, the stock market falls 30%. And so for order for a defined pension plan to stay 100% funded, even in those extraordinary periods of time with asset valuation decline, they need to go into those periods at not less than 125% funded. To best of my knowledge, this plan has never been markedly over 100% funded. When it gets to 100% funded, the benefit themselves, either the benefit increases or the contribution decreases. And so all we're doing here is we're saying, look, we very much applaud this decision that this group made. It was fully embraced and endorsed by every major group. We asked them just to stick to it. And when they
testified against it, because I'm looking at this and it looks like there are teacher groups that testified against it. So what was
Here's what happened.
Reasoning?
So when the plan was announced, You had the Missouri Association of School Administrators, Missouri Association of School Business Officials, Missouri National Education Association, Missouri National Education Association, retired employees, retired, all in full support, Missouri School Board Association, full support, Missouri School Counselor, full support, Missouri State Teachers Association, full support, St. Louis Community Colleges, full support, the Missouri Retired Teachers Association were concerned.
And I have that the Missouri NEA testified against that.
Now, what happened is when the announcement was made in August, they all celebrated the determination of the body. What they are in disagreement with is that we're asking them in law to stick to their plan. What they want is they want the flexibility to make changes with respect to contribution, to make changes with respect to the COLA, prior to the plan becoming 100% fully funded. And what we want to do in this bill is we want to, again, applaud them for the decision, ask them to stick to it, hope, quite honestly, hope and pray that it become, I personally would consider amending the bill to say that this stays in place until they're 125% funded. But I hope and pray they get to 100%.
And I don't know the answer to this, but how many of our retirement plans in the state are 100%
retired? Oh, the sad reality is just a handful. I mean, it's when you.
But do we have 12 or 14 of them?
No. We monitor on the plans? Joint committee, you know, I don't know if it's 100 plans, it's dozens and dozens of plans.
How many is it? 14 of them? How many plans do we have?
Oh, no. This bill is specific to this plan, but we monitor, the state has responsibility to oversee, maybe 75 different plans, and but for a handful of them, are they woefully funded.
So it would be difficult for them to get to 100%.
No. It might be difficult given other state laws that have been passed, such that the state law that says that the contribution rate can never go up by more than 1%, if that law didn't exist and these associations agreed to a dramatic increase in the contribution rate on the magnitude of 10 or 15 or 20% increase, they could get to 20% to 100% fully funded. No, what's going to have to happen, and you know, they adopted this this policy. It's a good policy. They asked for flexibility. We gave it to them. It's going to take years. If we're lucky, it's going to take years to get back to 100% funded. But when that day comes, then all this goes away. They have the complete discretion at that time as a plan to figure out what they want to do. You know, my understanding is that what this body and the General Assembly asked of all these retirement plans was to really recognize the fact that they had failed to let the plans become overfunded in the 17 or 18 good years, and that they consider things like adding new tiers, meaning, you know, as new employees come on, that the new employees would either be in a modified plan like the one that I'm in now, I have to make a contribution, whereas previous people elected prior 2010 didn't. So we as a group adopted a new tier. A lot of other organizations adopted new tiers. Actually, around the country, you've got an interesting thing going on. You've got places like California and New York and Rhode Island where they're not only contemplating and adopting new tiers, they're actually making changes to pre-existing pension benefits. None of that is asked of this in this bill. This bill just says, good idea, great idea, go ahead, stick with it until you get to 100% fully funded. I could make the case that it really should be until they're 125% fully funded, but you know what the board wants is they want complete discretion like they've always had. And what we're asking them is to, well, that's fine, get back to 100% funded. The reality, at the end of the day.
So why are we dictating what the board does?
Because we're responsible for the financial liability. You know, last year.
What if something comes up and they need some flexibility?
Well, they've got the flexibility. The flexibility that we've offered them is the flexibility they'll need, meaning if the plan falls, the asset values fall. Okay, so right now it's recovered to where it's back up above 80% funded, hopefully on its way to 100% funded, but if the financial markets were to decline, we're at 13,000 the Dow. If this time next year we're at 8,000 or 9,000 the Dow, the plan will fall back down to maybe 65% or 70% funded. And what they wanted, and which we granted them, was the flexibility to make changes to the plan that could then respond to the fact that it's become more greatly underfunded. The only
The only thing they can do in that regard is they can increase the contribution rate. And so the original bill froze it because that's what they intended to do in their announcements, to freeze it.
This is based on the movement of the market.
No. Well, it's the value of all the financial assets. So the way you look at this on an actual basis, you look at a rolling 3-year average of the value of all the assets. You look at the average value of the liabilities, and you put the two together. And when those two things are equal, when the actuarial value of the assets are equal to the value of the liabilities, such as 100% funded.
How often does that happen now?
It happened quite often in periods of extraordinary financial asset price performance. So in the 80s and 90s, I was not here. Very often it would probably be the case that we consistently got up to 100%.
We had a surplus. When
well, the problem, and that's a great point, is that the problem with our systems, not just this system, but all systems, is after a certain period of time where a surplus is reached, or for example, for a long period of time, back where we're from, the city of St. Louis, the firefighters' pension, for long periods of time, those responsible stopped making contributions because the plan got to be fully 100% funded. Really, what should have happened is the plan should have allowed to get to 125% funded, but that wasn't allowed to happen to this plan or any other pension plans. And the reason that didn't happen is quite frankly the blames on decision-making bodies who decided to increase the benefit, the blames on us, us generically as elected officials. We often will expand the benefit. We'll change the retirement requirements by shortening them. We'll introduce COLAs. Unfortunately, those in the plan, when they see that the plan is more than 100% funded, they lobby hard for an expansion of their benefit. And that's because they're looking at it, you know, year to year. This requires a much bigger picture. That's why we're taking a big picture view, which is, hey, stay committed to this set of policy changes, and we hope to get to 100% funded. The problem, Senator, is that, you know, last year, the total contributions to the plan was $1.4 billion, and that's GR. You know, so it's described as employee contribution and employer contribution, but in this case, we're the employer, and the salaries of the employees also comes out of our budget. And so not only are we responsible for that contribution rate, we're also responsible if the day would ever come. If the day would ever come where we had a tremendous economic disaster, right now, Illinois' pension, teachers' pension fund is 40% funded. And it was headline news just this week where the director of the Illinois' teachers' pension fund stood up in front of the press and said, we're going to have to take a long, hard look at decreasing the benefits of people who are retired today.
Yeah, I heard about that. It was on NPR this week.
That's the challenge. That's what we're trying to avoid. What we don't, what we're trying to do is we're trying to maintain the pensions that these 120,000 people have earned, that it's there for them. We want to give them the comfort and stability and the sense of knowing that plan's there. And so all we're doing is, again, we're codifying the decisions that the board made, and we're committed to seeing that pension's there for every single person that's in that plan.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the inquiry. I'm going to be listening to debate if there is any. There are a couple of areas where I still have some questions, but thank you so
much. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Cape Girardeau.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I can inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator from 24th, you yield?
Yes.
Proceed.
Senator, thank you very much for your inquiry. And did you want to leave? I can, or do you want to stay? Okay. Sorry, I've got cough drops, I've got Kleenexes.
Yesterday I took advantage of your. The reason I inquired you so much yesterday because I got you when you were down. You know.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I wanted to kind of walk through this because I think we might be able to clear up some of the questions that the senator had in your inquiry. I've had a couple other senators come to me, hey, what's going on? I do want to say to the senator from the 10th, I do have a white paper on this. I do have a scoring on it. I do have everything, and you should have already been distributed all that information. But
What's going on here, in all candidness to the Senate, is for the better part of 3 years now, I've been talking to our major retirement plans about what we're going to do to become fiscally solvent, okay? Many of us know and understand what we did with Emperors and Mosers. We created a new tier. We put that new tier in state statute, and it defines the benefit packages that are available within the given retirement systems that are there. The discussions with PSRS, other interested groups, members in the General Assembly, there was no desire to craft a new tier for teacher retirement system. So the alternative, the action that was taken by PSRS Pierce's board, is they said, we are going to adopt this 30-year funding policy, funding stabilization policy. Now, just as we have adopted every tier, new tier, in the state statute so that we lock it in, we know what the costs are, and we can actuarially project the true expenses of that retirement system, what we are now doing is we are taking what PSRS Pierce has adopted as its funding stabilization formula. In order to get the savings and the changes in the actuarial funding levels that they now project, they've got to follow that for the next 30 years. So all we are doing is saying, okay, if you don't want a new tier and you want to do this funding stabilization policy, then we're going to adopt that in state statute, just like we adopted the new tier for the other plans, so that we as legislators have the ability to then know what the true cost of these plans are. And it's not dependent upon changes that a board could do or not do, resetting the actuarial assumptions. As an example, in the white paper, in the justifications of why we did all of this, I explain that not PSRS, not teachers, not anybody else, but us as members of the General Assembly, between 1995 and 2007, through legislation that we passed, we authorized an additional $3.8 billion. Now, that's not million, that's billion dollars.
And that's
dollars.
The senator's from the 13th point, that's what happened. So the plan got fully funded during that period of time, and special interest group came down and lobbied us and said, hey, it's happy days, it's good times,
right.
We're 105% funded, you guys can afford to expand the benefit.
So, and we have to understand, in reality, that PSRS, for the last seven years, has been underfunded by their ARC by over $100 million every year. All right? Now, through the magic associated with an actuary and an assumption, just like we have heard, fiscal notes for historic preservation tax credits are only going to cost $10 million. Because of the assumptions they draw on the bill that are not in reality, the reality does not meet with all of those actuarial assumptions. So, through the miracle of adopting this funding stabilization formula, you went from a system that was on the watch list as underfunded, in trouble, and now they're at 85% funded.
Right.
A good funding, not on the watch list anymore for the Joint Committee. But it only got there if you follow that change that they adopted this summer for the next 30 years. And just like we didn't get the savings in the stabilization associated with Mosers or Emperors until we actually put in state statute the new tier, what we are saying is, if you are now going to represent to us that you are 85% funded, in order to now say, we don't need a new tier, Senator from Cape, see, we're fine. We want to keep the $3.8 billion in new benefits that you all gave us between 1995 and 2007. We don't want to reevaluate our ability to pay for that,
right,
even though we fully know through legislation that we passed, for the last 7 years, we haven't met our ARC. And I'm going to get real complicated. That's the actuarially required contribution rate that PSRS's own actuaries told them you must, to meet all your future funding liabilities, set aside this amount of money. And for the last 7 years, they've underfunded that by over $100 million a year. Now, through the miracle of new assumptions, when this summer they adopted this new funding stabilization policy, all of that went away on the actuary. But it only goes away if you follow it for the next 30 years. If what they did is they said, okay, we don't want a new tier. We're going to adopt this from 1 year, and then good, the senator from Cape is gone. No one else in the General Assembly will raise these issues. Happy times. We'll come back and do what we did from 95 to 2007, pass new benefits. Who gives a rip? Then we don't have what I think is important and why I applaud your bill, Senator, which is an understanding of what the true costs of these benefit packages are, so that then we can make appropriate public policy decisions. We're trying to work with these communities and these individuals. They didn't want a new tier like our state workers have, like our highway workers have. They wanted to do this through funding policies.
Right.
But it only works if it's followed for 30 years.
I think to the extent that, I mean, I don't even qualify this as reform. This is just, I mean, this is us just trying to do all we can to make sure that this stays actuarially sound.
Yeah.
You know, all around the country, you've got legislation that's been enacted that is dramatically changing every aspect of these plans because, as you're very much aware, you know, beginning in the early 70s, the private sector recognized that this was almost an impossibility. It's impossible to maintain these types of systems, these types of pension systems, and then over the last few generations, they've gotten out of all the ones, the only ones that are left are legacy. State governments and our government have continued to put forward this idea, this benefit, and I think what they've done is they've misrepresented to the citizens of Missouri just the tremendous liability that this puts all the citizens of Missouri. I mean, in this one plan alone, in today, it's a $5 billion unfunded mandate.
Let me give you. And I'm fighting for this on the board that I sit on Mosier's, just to give everyone the context of what we're dealing with and why it is so important that the assumptions that these boards take are known so that we can get to the true cost. Mosier's is going through a 5-year experience study where we're going to meet our assumptions, and we're going to reevaluate those. Currently, right now, Mosier's assumes a rate of return of 8.5%.
Right.
You understand financial markets. The senator from St. Francis understands financial markets. Anybody going to be able to get 8.5% a year?
It's a very high hurdle.
It's a lot of alpha. It's a lot of beta, and it's a tremendous amount of alpha. And I don't want
to
get too technical.
Clear,
how you invest your money. Alpha is how, once you have where you're going to invest it between a bond split and an equity split and some other limited partnerships, how much better you do it than anyone else in the market.
Just to make it easier, even simpler to understand, the higher that rate of return assumption, the higher that number, the better the plan looks.
Correct.
Right.
Well, so, the cheaper the plan is in the contribution rate. Because let's understand, and this has been the debate that I've had with everyone as we go through these pension bills, that I think it's important. I know it's difficult. I know it's confusing. But it's really simple once you get your head wrapped around this simple comment. Once you determine what the benefit package is, how rich a plan is, how much the benefit package costs, you have to understand that you have guaranteed that that's going to be paid. No matter what, if the New Madrid fault goes off, if, you know, the market collapses in 2008, no matter what.
The rate of return is a guaranteed rate. This is one of the first things I set up on last year, is that the state, I mean, think, what's the core function of government, right? Well, one of our biggest functions as a result of these tensions is to guarantee a rate of return, in your board's case, 8.5%, in this retirement plan's case, 8%. The state is guaranteeing 8% return.
Senator, three senators on the floor. Senator from 15th.
Thank you. We'd ask for unanimous consent to introduce some special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you. I apologize for interrupting the debate, but the senator from the first and I share the city of Crestwood in our Senate districts. And Crestwood Elementary is here today with us in the upper gallery. They're there in the yellow shirts. That school is known across St. Louis as being one of the finest elementary schools with parents that are really involved in their kids' education, and we're really happy that they're here to join us today and would ask my colleagues make them feel welcome as they join us.
Body, please make the guests feel welcome. And we hope the school children have a great day at the Missouri Capitol, and welcome to the Missouri Senate. Senators, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I can continue my inquiry with the senator from 24th.
Proceed.
Like I was saying, I know these are incredibly complicated topics, but if you wrap your hands and mind around this, once you define the benefit package, you're guaranteeing that that will be paid regardless. Now, the only way in which to pay for those things, real simple, taxpayer money, employee contributions.
Which in this case is taxpayer money too.
Correct. And employer contributions. Not a whole lot of moving parts in that evaluation. And then you have investment gains. So what is very important, I think, as the individuals that control what's called the trust master document, the language in state statute that defines the benefits, until we, and a lot of people are like, why are you putting this in state statute? Well, we have defined what the benefit package is in state statute. Yeah. So we defined what the cost is. If we don't also define how that cost is actuarially calculated, then we don't know how to truly judge whether or not the benefit package is too rich or not rich enough.
And to the extent that people have said, well, this, why would you codify and decrease our flexibility? Well, that, you know, we've already passed a law that says they can't raise the contribution rate.
Correct.
We've already tied their hands. And, I would be for the repeal of that because,
right.
I mean, they need the flexibility. I mean, you know.
But the teachers groups don't want that.
No,
because
no,
they only want their employee contribution to be able to raise 0.5%,
right,
and then the district to raise 0.5%. That's part of the reason, or is the main reason, that PSRS has not met their actuarially required ARC for the last 7 years by over $100 million each year. And so to continue this, why are we doing this, and why is it important? And if we're not going to redefine how much a plan costs in the benefit structure, then it's very, very important that we do have a defining cost in the assumptions that are used on how that cost is calculated.
Right.
Because here's the point. By adopting this funding stabilization policy by PSRS, and this is in the white paper on page 2, the June 30th, 2011 PSRS actuarial evaluation conveyed an increased PSRS funded ratio of over 7%, from 77.7% to 85.5%.
Just because the policy changed.
Just from,
right,
how we changed the numbers. And the biggest one is that they say we're no longer going to give these COLAs when there is no inflation. It used to be that they gave these COLAs all the time. And that was one of the biggest
2%
ones.
2% COLA.
Yeah.
And as long as inflation is below 5.
Correct.
And 5% COLA. It's funny because you've probably gotten the same emails I've gotten that people have said in the email, oh, they're trying to freeze our COLA at 2% for 30 years.
They've already done that. That's what they said they would do.
But even then, that in and of itself is not true, because if inflation is higher than 5,
correct. It will go up. I agree.
If what the board said was we're going to go to 2% COLA, or 5 if it's higher, that's what the board said. What we've said in legislation is, well, as soon as you get to 100% funded, then you can go to any COLA you want.
Right.
You know, so if anything, the board has adopted a policy that's less clear to the retirees with respect to their COLA.
And
we've introduced a policy
right.
that's more clear. And again, it's a misrepresentation or an outright lie to suggest to a retiree that their COLA is set at 2% for 30 years when all the plan has to do is get to 100% fully funded.
And let's get real here. The only reason that they're opposing this now is because they have no intention of following it. They just wanted to do it for a stunt. They just wanted to do it for a gimmick. They just wanted to do it to avoid the necessity of looking at a new tier.
Well, Senator,
the
reason I put my name on this legislation, and I think it's important, is first and foremost, it secures the viability of this plan.
I agree.
For the 120,000. I mean, can you imagine, I live on a border city, a border area. Can you imagine being a retired Illinois state teacher today who, you know, their plan is 40% funded. Most of the money that's been put in the plan the last 10 years is money that Illinois actually borrowed. And now you've got the person who runs the plan in a public forum just saying, look, we're going to have to look at cutting benefits. Can you imagine being that person who's, 70 years old, retired after teaching career, and now what they depend on is in question. And that's what we are trying to avoid.
Exactly.
First and foremost. Secondly, is that the state of Missouri is guaranteeing 8% return. And all the citizens have to stand behind that. And there's a situation by such that suddenly, you and I are on agreement on this, is that these plans, once they're offered, you have to go bankrupt to not live up to them as a state. So you could have a situation where the other 6,000 Missourians who aren't pensioners someday have to come up with tens of hundreds of billions of dollars to fund the pensions of the promises that were made. So we're protecting those participants that are in the plan today, and we're protecting those the future generations of Missourians to have them know that, that won't happen.
That's the purpose behind it. I hope it's kind of answered some questions that people have that are out there relative to it. It's vital. It's vital that we understand what the cost of these plans are. Otherwise, you don't have the ability to make an informed decision when you do amend the master trust document, the defining benefit packages that are out there.
Missouri is very proud of its lack of debt, and I would suggest that this is just not qualified as such, that this
right.
is tens of billions of dollars in outstanding obligations. Not to mention, I actually before, in the same universe, in the same group of employees whereby we offer these pensions, where we have funds to afford them, we also offer medical benefits, don't we?
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
Which are completely underfunded.
Absolutely.
And there's by some accounts nationwide, there's at least $1 trillion, with a T, unfunded pension liability, and a $2 trillion healthcare unfunded liability. It's extraordinary. Now, Missouri's, we're very fortunate we're not in such straits as some of our neighbors, but it's only because people before us have tried their best to try to make sure this plan stays as solvent as they can be.
And that's what we're trying to do in a transparent and open way, to be honest that this has a cost. We need to understand what that cost is. We need to lock in that cost structure and how that cost is done. Otherwise, we don't have the information to be able to make the public policy decisions that are associated with it. And we chose to go down this route, working with those in the community that said they didn't want a new tier. So without a new tier, we need to codify how we're going to calculate the benefit package that's out there. And I applaud your reasoning. You're moving forward of this legislation. As I said before, we've given out the white papers and the understandings of where things are done, and would be happy to answer any other questions and wish you well in perfecting your legislation. Thank you.
President, I would ask that this bill be put back on the informal calendar.
December 24th, what reason do you rise? The bill would be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Senate, we'll go to the order of business and reports to standing committees. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Send the report forward. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 856, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 715 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 673 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 631 begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Dempsey, Chairman.
Senator from 23rd.
President, without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Order of business of announcements. Senator from the 15th, what reason do you ask?
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Jobs, Economic Development, and Local Government will be meeting upon adjournment, which means in about 30 seconds.
Senator from Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your hardworking Education Committee will convene promptly at 1:30 p.m., and our talented Vice Chairman will be conducting the session today. So Education at 1:30.
Any other announcements? Seeing none, Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 3 o'clock this day.
I've heard the motion from the Senator from 23rd. Those of the opinion that motion should prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, say no. The ayes have it. We'll stand in recess till 3 p.m. today.